This is Samantha LaDuc, founder of LaDuc Trading. I'm going to be joined by Craig Shapiro. Yes, he is in the house. Great, great, great. And we are basically basking in the glow of NVIDIA earnings. Yeah, they crushed it. So it's a monster beat. Let's see how market reacts. I'm definitely wanting to just make sure you can hear me. So somebody let me know. Just a quick rundown, NVIDIA Q3 guide, $16 billion revenues. They're already going from 7 to 13 to $16 billion quarter over quarter. So it is definitely a solid beat, although growth is starting to slow a lot. They had a ton front loaded. All right, let's see. Yeah, good. All right. So what are we annualizing that to about $65 billion? Anyway, we're at 20 times sales, market cap $1.2 trillion, and they are authorizing a $25 billion buyback. So it's really insanely expensive, but the market still loves it. And that is basically it in a nutshell. So welcome, everyone. We're actually doing macro to micro power hour. Ask us anything, but we really, really, really wanted to do this live after NVIDIA earnings, because that's a sentiment tell for the market. We just really needed to get through it, right? So Craig and I talk, obviously, on the macro event risks, and we want to focus on that. We've got tons with Jackson Hole and BRICS conference and unemployment, jobless claims tomorrow morning. But most of the attention right now is on NVIDIA. So Craig, can you hear me? Would you like to unmute and give your thoughts on this beat? And obviously the reaction after hours is to push up above 370 in NASDAQ 100, which was an area that I thought we might overshoot to 370, but I'm taking a look right now and seeing if we're getting any petering out. We're really not. We've got this lovely 500 level psychological level with NVIDIA, some profit taking for the cowboys and cowgirls who definitely traded this event. So now, is it going to turn into, you know, buy the rumor, sell the news? We'll have to wait until regular trading hours tomorrow. But any insights on what market, where market might be disappointed would be something I'm interested in hearing. And then we can kind of drill into other topics of note, which is coming up, wage inflation, United Auto Workers vote, Powell Friday morning, debt ceiling. Oh my God, I thought that was done. It's so back. And of course, China, whether or not they're really suffering, and more specifically, would they do a surprise deval? So let's see. Craig, there you are. Talk to me if you've got any comments on NVIDIA. I know it's fresh out of the oven.
Yeah. You know, not a name that, you know, I'm not in the weeds too specifically here, but clearly it's, you know, major market importance given the composition of and percentage weight in NASDAQ, and, you know, clearly has been the narrative du jour for the first 8 months of the year has been the AI theme. And this has been the poster child for, you know, for that. I mean, implied move was, I think, like 10, 11%. So we're up 7%. And so we're not there yet. So I suspect tomorrow is going to be a lot of vol selling in the name. 750,000 calls traded today and 580,000 puts, most of those for Friday expiry. So a pretty insane day of option trading here for this name. And look, this is, you know, this is the biggest theme for the market this year. It's been where the, you know, the largest composition of winners has come from, you know, big cap tech and the AI theme. And so, you know, we'll see. I mean, it's, I don't know if we're ringing the bell at the top here, but I mean, you know, it's pretty loud. And I don't know, the fact that they're buying back stock, I don't really know them, you know, so well. It's a company that trades it, you know, 20, 25 times sales, buying back stock as opposed to selling stock. I think that's what they should be doing maybe, but I don't know. I mean, this was clearly, you know, event number one of a pretty packed week. And, you know, event number two is Friday with Jackson Hole and, you know, whatever Powell wants to articulate about mission completed or not on inflation and kind of intonate what the rest of the year might look like for the Fed is clearly going to be of major importance. And so, you know, yes, this is a the market kind of came into the week oversold. VIX was elevated, and so saw a bit of VIX and vol crush into NVIDIA. Imagine we'll get some more of that tomorrow, particularly on the tech side. But it's not it's an eerie similarity to last year when we were down into the week before Jackson Hole. We rallied the week of Jackson Hole, aided by an NVIDIA beat, and then we walked in on Friday morning into Jackson Hole expecting Powell to be dovish, and then he was anything but. So we'll see if what kind of message he has to deliver on Friday.
And you did make a good point as a, just on a technical note, we did have VIX spike into the 200-day, which is for those who are into technical analysis, is a really common area for rejection and or just digestion. You kind of go long into the 200, you go short into the 200, but once you get there at the 200-day, we typically go sideways in large swaths. So we definitely got rejected perfectly at that price target. And the Qs came right back down beautifully after 3 weeks, right into a 355 price target, which was support from where we broke out basically at the beginning of June. So once that June 1st kind of stalking inflation rotation or value rotation that helped the market expand broader as it related to value trades, not just mega cap tech or junior tech had, that had been taking off in May. We actually got a rotation into inflationary trades, reflation trades. And then, of course, all that short covering factor rotation, which took off in big way back in July. And then, of course, energy also helped. So we basically had a fabulous run from that 355 NASDAQ 100 right up until August, the Treasury data was released on that 731, which you had been tracking very, very closely. And then the following week, we started to peter out and then fall for 3 weeks. So this to me was very much set up as a technical oversold bounce. Breadth was very much oversold, again, technically speaking, after 3 weeks. So a bounce that we've had since Friday into NVIDIA is one thing, how it can sustain now that we are through NVIDIA earnings, and it's definitely holding. I mean, the Qs are at 372 right now. It's a really great level to digest and even move higher into 377. So let's see what we have for the rest of the week. But like you said, we'll have a lot more macro event potential drama coming from Powell on Friday morning. What time is he slated to speak?
10
All
o'clock.
right, so perfect. All right. Any other kind of comments in regards to expectation for this unemployment jobless claims tomorrow morning, given we've had a big revision expected to come down the pike? Basically, they've underestimated the jobs that have been lost, and they're going to be revising that number. Have you had a chance to take a look at that?
That number came out this morning. It was a revision of jobs from, March 22 through March 23, and I think people were thinking we would be, we'd lose like 500 to 650,000 jobs. Came in, we 300,000 jobs less. We created, instead of creating 4 million jobs over that period of time, we created like 3.7 million jobs. So look, I mean, it's worse, but we still have a labor market that is, fairly strong, where wages are still, more robust than not. We're hiring. There's still shortages in wide swaths of the economy, and the idea that a very sizable and strong rate hiking cycle was gonna, crush the economy and lead to massive layoffs imminently, kind of, really hasn't played out. And so I think we continue to push these calls for recession out further in time. This morning we did get these PMI numbers, flash PMIs globally and for the US, which definitely showed some more deceleration, more so abroad than here in the US. But even the services PMI here kind of came down from 52 to 51. So, I think there's maybe some early signs of an economy that is feeling, the teeth of tightening to some degree, but certainly not enough yet to, bring down inflation to intended target of 2%. So as far as claims tomorrow are concerned, I mean, expectations for 240,000, that doesn't feel like we've gotten to the point yet where we're going to inflect materially higher in initial jobs claims yet. Just not really seeing that from the layoffs and from the data yet. But I think folks are certainly waiting, waiting for that. So we also get some durable goods orders tomorrow, some more regional PMIs, and then on Friday we get the final reading for University of Michigan sentiment and inflation expectations. And I think there is some upward risk potential here on the inflation side, as they come to a final reading after the prelim reading came in for 1 year at 3.3% and 5 to 10 year at 2.9%. I think there might be some upside risk to those final numbers given the move in gasoline that we had seen, over the course of the last month or so. So, that number could come out right when Powell's speaking and, intonate a stickier inflation, market. And I think the data that we're getting, is kind of bringing in this idea of potential stagflation again, where growth is slowing, but not recessionary, but inflation is sticky and not aggressively getting down to 2%. And so I think that the message from Powell on Friday is going to be one that, doesn't suggest that mission has been completed on inflation. I don't think he's going to be ringing the bell and saying, we've done a great job here, then thanks for playing. I think he's going to articulate that there's still work to be done, that the Fed takes this job seriously. And, so there's been some talk in, the journal and other in FinTwit about, moving the inflation target from 2% to 3%. I don't think that is something that we're going to hear anything about. The Fed has specifically several times from several members, said that is not on the table, that is not an option. And so I don't intend to hear, I don't, expect, certainly don't expect Powell to say anything
But
about that.
actually, Lori Logan had talked about this many, many moons ago, where that would be a potential of moving the goalpost up.
I think they've all said that this is subject to, there's a 5 year long-term cycle planning program at the Fed. The last one was 2020, where they, kind of introduce inflation, average inflation targeting. The next one's going to take place in 2025. It's possible that at that point in time, this may come up for discussion, but we're just not there yet, and we're not anticipating being there. And countless of them said, if we don't get to two, we lose, and then we say we're going to just stop at three, we instantly lose credibility. And so I think that is not a message for, certainly that's not a message for Friday. It's nice to, articulate, pontificate about it and, listen to Jason Furman and Paul Krugman talk about it. But I don't really think that that's a serious contention at this point at the Fed. But what I do think is possible is that there has been some upward momentum on the long-term dot, on the margin kind of creeping higher. Some more members have talked about, maybe raising that neutral rate dot. I think there's an expectation for 2024 of three or four rate cuts. I think as we look into 20, the Set meeting, we get a new SEP. I think we're going to see, those dots maybe get revised higher. I think the Fed's going to want to, continue to farm, push out the, the idea of rate cuts. Because once we get a market that embraces rate cuts, we get this risk-taking behavior again that comes in animal spirits and raises inflation expectations and makes it difficult for the Fed to achieve, its mandated goal of getting down to 2%. So I think they're gonna, try to push that narrative. And I expect Powell, I think Powell's gonna sound hawkish, on Friday. And particularly now that we've cracked the VIX a little bit into it and sold it back down again. And, similarly yields at the long end, which had kind of been breaking out to highs, have now come in, 10, 15, 20 basis points, depending where you look on the curve after some, some exhaustion. I think there's maybe some more risk there on the upside for yields as well.
So let's talk about the title of this whole session, right? Bond bulls need to defend here. Boy, did they, right? So we literally have, and by the way, NVIDIA bulls have as well. We literally went into this, as you know, you have been, we do this weekly for clients. Just tell me, where do you think we're going on this bond bounce? And where's the next red flag as it relates to rejection? Because you and I were both very much you know, big bond bears. But in particular, we came into this October 22 low, whether it's TLT or ZB or ZN or what have you. And I warned, this is where bond bulls need to defend here. We've been here a few times before, and they have come in typically with some type of intervention. Back in October, you know, September, it was Treasury is, you know, illiquid. Yellen came out and said, we're going to work on that. Bank of Japan did a massive yen intervention end of September. And again, October 21st, we had in what it equated to, amounted to about $1.5 trillion, according to Matt King, in central bank liquidity infusion during that whole period. Even China came in and said, you know, we're going to order state banks to buy equities here. Again, this was all late October. So, of course, bonds stopped going down. Equities stabilized and started moving higher, very, very much on liquidity central bank intervention. So fast forward, here we are again. Bonds are at the same level. Specifically, even referring to TLT, we came right back down into that kind of 92 handle. And then this morning, we had a nice drop in the USD JPY, and that timed perfectly with an outsized bounce in TLT and in gold, silver miners, yen, of course. So this is very coincidental, isn't it? But what do you think prompted that? Just a technical oversold bounce, or have we seen some type of indication that you know, bond bulls are in better shape?
No, look, I mean, I think if you compare this period to October of last year, the rhetoric and the heat around this idea that yields are moving higher and are, you know, crushing, whether it's Japan or the UK or whoever, it seems a lot less this time. It doesn't seem as much angst around the world as we saw with the pension crisis in the UK and September and October of last year. So I just think that we've had a fairly sizable move up in yields over the course of the last couple months. And that's obviously been accelerated by the Treasury decision to finally, you know, accelerate duration issuance again, you know, through the back half of this year. But I think what we saw in the last 48 hours or so is, you know, maybe some exhaustion, you know, yield trying to make a new high and kind of come back in. But, you know, and then you get some bad data points on the macro side and on the growth side, on the PMI side. And here we are, you know, we've come in whatever it is, 15, 20 basis points on 10s and 30s. And so, but I don't think there's anything, you know, more than that. To me, it seems like this is a, you know, a little bit of an exhaustion correction. And I think we're going to continue to see, you know, yields marching higher as, you know, the economy kind of holds on, employment stays tight, inflation stays sticky. And we start to, we continue to introduce, you know, some term premium back into the long end of the market. So I think we'll be, I think Friday will be interesting for sure. And, you know, yields going, you know, in at the highs on Friday morning would have been a lot harder, but here we, you know, now we've come in a little bit, maybe tomorrow, you know, depending on the claims data comes in or the durable goods numbers, maybe we get some more bond bullishness, yields lower. But, you know, last year when Powell was hawkish, at Jackson Hole, we had a, you know, pretty sizable move up in rates in a very short period of time. And, you know, I know it's not entirely analogous, but for me, I think we're going to see, you know, 450 and above in 10s in the not too distant future.
We've already had the 2 and 10 yield curve start to steepen. This is obviously one day wonder as it relates to a big push lower in the 10-year. But we still have already kind of made that double bottom and we're starting to intonate higher. This to me is going to be all eyes on NVIDIA right now for, you know, the foreseeable nanosecond, because it's so exciting to have a sentiment that is very, very bullish after the market starts to kind of to price in this Fed pause and bond bear narrative. But the reality is that we're just at this inflection point where what is priced to perfection, like NVIDIA, is going to be a potential risk factor should it not continue to digest sideways to higher. In other words, we had this great explosion last earnings, and it took probably 6 weeks before it moved higher. So in the meantime, we've got this event of other, you know, foreboding idea that we have debt ceiling on the whole calendar again. So when does the market start to pay attention to that and ignore NVIDIA?
Yeah, I mean, I don't really think that the debt ceiling is something that the market's going to focus on too aggressively. You know, maybe the last week of September. That's ultimately where, you know, where we get. I know, you know, Freedom Caucus has come in and said that, you know, they're not going to do a continuing resolution, and you know, there's a lot of tough talk, but Congress isn't even in session right now. So, you know, I think this is really more of an issue for the second half of September at most. So I don't really think that that's too big of an issue. I think what's more, you know, what's more interesting to me at this point is that we've arrived, you know, we're in this potential window of weakness being open after expiry. We're in this August, September, October period of the year that historically has shown, you know, reasonable drawdowns, right? September being kind of the worst month of the year. So we're coming into that, and we have a market structure now where we're in, dealers are in a negative gamma position, realized vol is starting to pick up, you know, so we're getting some more in the way of systematic flows that could be triggered to sell, whether it's CTAs, which already have been selling, vol control funds, risk parity funds. And so, you know, look, I think if the rates market continues to be volatile, and, you know, we'll certainly get a view on that on Friday, depending on how Powell sounds, you know, we could be in a position where, you know, rate vol moves up, the move index moves up, takes vol back up, leads to more of this systematic selling. That's the environment that I'm particularly concerned about for, you know, for September. Is, yes, it's nice that NVIDIA is, you know, is making a new high here, but under the hood you have an economy that maybe is experiencing some stagflation. Yields are moving higher, we're bear steepening. Banks are certainly in trouble. Banks are my largest short position. Regional banks here, which are seeing the deposit walk, which are, you know, having their whole, you know, hold to maturity portfolios, are getting dinged by the move in the long end, and they're going to have to raise equity or debt, which we saw from, you know, Schwab early in the week, and I suspect they're not the first ones. So if banks can't really participate, and in China, which I haven't really talked about yet, is seeing, you know, a slowdown and is not engaging in massive stimulus, you know, it's going to be hard for energy to move materially higher. It's going to be hard for materials to go higher and industrials to go higher. We're going to lose that value cyclical component of the market. That's where I'm particularly, you know, focused here on, you know, on the short side. And so, you know, that's an environment that I think is concerning, and one that I'm going to try to take advantage of on the downside.
Well, as it relates to next steps on the kind of macro front, we have to talk about the BRICS conference this week. I mean, we're touching upon everything. And if anyone has any questions, definitely, you know, ping me here so I can, my first time in doing a Twitter Spaces as a host versus a participant. So if I see it, I can ask it. But for right now, this week, I don't want to overshadow the fact that BRICS conference is in play. And yes, we haven't really paid attention because of NVIDIA and Powell coming up. But have you been following it, this de-dollarization focus, but more importantly, the you know, the players that are showing up and those who aren't? Any interest?
Yeah, well, I think. You know, the BRICS plus concept, which is, you know, BRICS plus, you know, various countries that are trying to become members of BRICS, whether it be Saudi or UAE or Iran or whoever else. I think over time, you know, these countries want to continue to engage in more, you know, cross-border transactions in local currencies and transacting away from the US dollar. And, you know, whether it's in a, you know, in their own currencies or maybe in a neutral currency. I mean, so I think this is a trend that's been largely in place for years already. You know, this meeting is, you know, a semi culmination of a lot of that work. But I don't think we're going to get some, you know, heroic announcement that, you know, some BRICS currency is being established. What I do think we're going to get potentially is, you know, it does seem like maybe Saudi and UAE might be added here to BRICS. And the only thing that I think is interesting from that point is that it suggests that, you know, both of those countries are going to be selling more oil away from dollars whether it's in RMB, whether it's in rupees, whether it's in, you know, a different, you know, it's in real, different currencies, when they're transacting. And so I think as we continue to get that trend, you basically are creating a situation where the foreign usage of US treasuries as a surplus asset, a reserve asset, is going down. And so on the margin, less foreign demand for US treasuries means more domestic demand for US treasuries is going to be needed in order to you know, fill the government's coffers and deal with the growing deficits that we have. And so you know, as we shift and do more private and domestic demand for treasuries, and yields are going to be moving higher. And so I think that's the ultimate underlying trend of you know, that comes out of this BRICS meeting, not some, you know, heroic, there's a new currency here or some gold-backed currency. I think this is just the acceleration of a trend that's been largely in place for, you know, 5, 6, 7 years already. And I think it's very interesting, you know, is what a lot of the focus has been kind of coming into this week has been the struggles in China, the struggles in Russia, the struggles in their currency markets, and this idea that these countries are, you know, basically falling apart or falling into, you know, disarray. And what I find, you know, particularly interesting about that is that no one seems to be focusing on the fact that US long end yields are making new highs at the same exact time. And this is a very different environment to 2015, where we had the China devaluation and bonds rallied, you know, massively. So you kind of have a very precarious situation here where RMB and ruble and other emerging market currencies are devaluing against the dollar, but US rates are also moving higher at the same time. So something is amiss, right? Something is going on here that's different. I think it has a lot to do with this idea about treasury supply growing, these US deficits that are growing at an accelerating pace, and they're, you know, being exacerbated by higher interest costs. And so, you know, things are shifting. And I think that's been part of the backup in the long end has been this concept. So again, no specific fireworks from BRICS, but more of just kind of more of the same, you know, where countries are going to be, you know, continuing to try to transact away from the dollar.
And with good reason. I mean, when we are borrowing so large that just at a point we're getting to just need to service the debt, meet interest payments, it causes these interest rates to rise, forcing the government to accumulate even more debt. So it's a vicious cycle. And, you know, some call it, Bloomberg had a little article that was very well entitled, The Death Spiral, right? A debt bomb is a death spiral for a country. So there's worry, but the trigger of having this kind of quasi-fiscal deficit theme pick up more is what I'm kind of trying to get and track. When do we start to get into this space of sovereign debt now becomes a primary concern, not Nvidia earnings?
Yeah, look, I think, you know, we've started that process. I think the, you know, Treasury's decision on July 31st and August 2nd to finally accelerate, you know, duration issuance, you know, in the fourth quarter of this year, I think was, you know, a real step in that direction. And the size of the borrowing, you know, in the third quarter, we're going to be, you know, $1 trillion of new debt issuance, and another 800 or so billion in, you know, in the fourth quarter. I mean, the numbers are just getting, you know, incredibly large, even larger than people thought. That monthly budget deficits are running, you know, at an, you know, extraordinary rate. We're talking about a deficit this year at 8%+ of GDP, despite full employment. So, you know, that's been part of the reason why inflation has been hard to arrest. It's because the government is putting a ton of money into people's hands, into corporations' hands. And so I think, you know, over the course of the last few weeks, I mentioned in one of my pieces was we crossed the Rubicon here. People are waking up to this. Is it going to happen over the course of the next 3 to 6 weeks? Probably not. But I think in the background, there is a larger acceptance of this idea that the government's deficits are out of control, and it's going to get more and more expensive for them to finance them unless, you know, eventually the Fed comes in and kind of, you know, stops this either but through cutting rates or, you know, restarting QE. And neither of those things are even being thought about right now in light of the current inflationary environment. So I think we're in a very, challenging place here, for the government's balance sheet. And I think it's going to become an increasing part, of the narrative through the end of this year and into 2024.
And we have a very big narrative change in Japan. Deflation is obviously flipped there, and they have doubled their yield curve cap. Not once, but twice. So as we are pushing up...
This space was downloaded via spacesdown.com. Visit to download your spaces today.
In their 10-year Japanese bond yield, this has also supported this inflation narrative that's happening in Japan. And we've had higher 10-year yields as a result, but this is kind of interesting timing. We've had such a long deflation theme, not only in interest rates here, but also abroad. Now that's changing. We're kind of tied at the hip with Japan in many ways. What's your thinking on the probability of more, I should say, or higher, Asian currency risk and corresponding higher yields in the U.S. since this kind of carry trade is starting to unwind?
Yeah, look, I mean, Japan needs to kind of make a decision here, I think, and how much does it allow its yields to catch up in order to kind of save its currency. And so there's definitely been an inflationary impulse in Japan. Actually, Ueda speaks, I think, on either Friday night or Saturday at Jackson Hole. So we will get, some more information potentially from him. Lagarde also, I believe, is speaking this weekend too. So it's a big, the big three are speaking at Jackson Hole. But yeah, look, there is a strong push to see higher long end yields in Japan. And when that happens, you're going to have increasingly see Japanese overseas investment coming home. Right now, Japanese hedged investors in U.S. Treasuries are earning negative yields because of the high cost to hedge their currency, given the short-term rates in the U.S. are so high. It's more attractive for them to invest domestically in the long end of their bond market. And there's been countless stories from pension funds and insurance companies in Japan who are bringing capital back home. And so there is a repatriation theme going on, which should help support the yen, but it also continued to be pressure on long end yields in the U.S. So if you look back in previous kind of bond market meltdowns of the last 40 or so years, even leading back to 1987, Japan's fixed income market selling off has often been at the forerunner of that. So yeah, we're watching that pretty closely here. And yields, 10-year yields are 67 basis points. It's they've moved kind of through the band of 50, moved the cap of 50, and we'll kind of see how that plays out, but that will continue to add pressure to the long end of all developed market bond markets.
Now, speaking of Asian currencies, how about China risk of a surprise devaluation? What do you give the chances?
Very, very small, very small. I think they are not in a position or in a desire to see or to to surprise the markets in such a surprise in a way that they did in 2015. I think they kind of largely view that as a mistake, and what that led to, and how it led to capital flows and kind of led to capital outflows and some of the issues there. So I think they're just more along the lines of kind of dealing with the currency as opposed to kind of a one-time shock. But they are struggling on the property side. They're struggling on the local government financing vehicle side. There's some struggles in the wealth management product side. So they have issues, which makes it difficult to, I think, invest in domestic Chinese assets, whether they be, equities or, some of the base metals or what have you. But they do have some resources, right? They have a massive overseas, net investment positive position. They could sell down treasuries. They could sell in other assets in order to raise dollars to slow down this pace. So I think they are not going to be enacting some massive stimulus anytime soon. I think it's just going to be, kind of supporting the economy, supporting some domestic, infrastructure and whatnot, but, not giving some sort of big bazooka that maybe has been priced in. Certainly that expectation has started to become priced out, but there had been an expectation that was going to be coming. I don't believe it to be coming. I think China's more likely to wait until things get a little bit dicier in the global economy, where maybe them enacting stimulus can have more of a positive impact. Right now, if they're doing stimulus and the rest of the world is tightening, I think there's a kind of reduced impact there. And so I think they're cognizant of that and won't be too aggressive in adding stimulus here.
All right. You have any particular interest or subject you want to kind of talk about on this macro front or even NVIDIA? That's perfectly fine.
Look, I think, again, I think we're in a situation now where this window of weakness is potentially open in light of some of the underlying structural market structure type situations around, dealer gamma, realized vol picking up, and some of these systematic flows, which have been kind of the big driver of risk performance to, all year, has been these inflows from these kind of inelastic buyers of securities. We are starting to see a shift now that realized vol is moving up. We have systematic, selling. You have dealers that are in negative gamma positions. So there's going to be a kind of selling begets more selling environment if we were to, have a gap down or some risk off. And so I think when you combine that with some of these issues that I've been discussing regarding the Fed and the tightening agenda, as well as, China slowing and maybe some of the, and Europe slowing and maybe some of these PMIs coming in negative, that maybe we're just finally in this air pocket here where, fundamentals have stalled out. The technicals have kind of stalled out. Maybe turn the other way, and some of the systematic stuff can exacerbate any moves to the downside here. So I think this is a very precarious position here as we kind of head into September. Historically the weakest month of the year. And if we could get markets get a little bit unhinged, I think, they can get a lot unhinged very, very quickly. And the way that that's going to happen is if rates vol picks up further, and, we'll see how, and I think Powell is kind of the architect or the administrator of that throttle come Friday. And we'll see how the market reacts to whatever he has to say.
And what sectors are you right now most bearish on?
Yeah. I mean, for me, regional banks are, I think the epicenter of this problem again. Clearly they were the problem in March and in February, March. And the only thing that's changed between February and March is that now they could put their assets, to the Fed if needed. But that comes at a very expensive cost of borrow for them. And so, their earnings story there is a disaster. Deposit flight is reaccelerating again. I think Jim Bianco has called it a deposit walk, but it's going to, continue to find flight when, you can earn 5.3 going to 5.5%, 5.55% at the RRP, in a money market fund, or, even in a short-term, CD at other places. So I think regional banks are going to continue to be a problem, and are going to have to raise debt or equity. And that's going to, be a consternation for them. That's where I'm focusing a lot of my short attention right now. As far as overbought, oversold sectors, I mean, energy to me seems like it does have a good multi-year story on supply demand dynamics, but right now it does look a little bit overbought. More on the overbought side than not. So I've been trying to find some kind of short opportunities there. And, look, on the long side here, I think defensives are, maybe starting to get interesting again, but the most defensive thing where I'm sniffing around, we haven't discussed it yet, is gold. And I've been adding to a September options position in gold, because I think gold, will anticipate, the need for liquidity as things potentially unravel. I think gold's held in incredibly well in U.S. dollars. Despite the real rates move that we've had so far. And I think in a risk off scenario, gold will do incredibly well. So I've been kind of sniffing around and adding to my gold line.
All very, very helpful, I'm sure. Okay, so anyone who is, you know, listening, just to give you a heads up, Craig is our macro advisor edge manager. So he works side by side with clients who either manage their own money or professionally manage other people's money. And as you can tell, he's extremely experienced in this area of macro, both equities, fixed income, et cetera. So he's someone that I have been very, very lucky to work with for many years. He was actually a client for a number of years. And then during the COVID kind of transitioned down into your second home down in Naples. And basically I said, would you like to come in and help me work with these institutions? I'm, you know, very comfortable with market timing, and I drill in using kind of an intermarket analysis, cross asset, technical analysis, and very much love running a live trading room across chase, swing, and trend timeframes. But the macro backdrop and the macro event risk, he does better than most. So I'm very, very, you know, very, very pleased to kind of be able to do these for clients, but also publicly, like this little talk live session, and run through the big items that are of interest to folks. And obviously, NVIDIA is one of them. If it had been a disappointment, then obviously we would have kind of continued in our two-way market. This bounce is definitely of size, but we are not right into you know, a resumption of the bull rally. I don't think we're quite safe enough to say that yet, but we'll see how the week closes. And definitely the Powell event on Friday morning at 10 o'clock will typically be volatility suppressing until the event. And then we kind of, as Craig mentioned, this wall kind of starts to evaporate, and we get some more movement on the following week. So I'm the wall of weakness. I actually have gone out on a limb and said, I actually see a lot of option market structure that is lower into the end of September. And it's not really the JP Morgan caller that most are focused on, but with some of these other macro event risks of, you know, especially wage inflation has delayed recession, but it definitely is getting to a point where the jobless claims are coming into an area of moving higher. And that's going to slowly and then all at once kind of pull forward recession risk. But we're not there yet. And we haven't been there. And I thought we would actually get there when I said so last year. I thought we'd be there by June, July. So we're already in August and we haven't had that that narrative pull forward. But we have had, you know, sovereign debt absolutely, or debt bomb as Bloomberg called it, hit the airways a lot more. Moving the terminal peak rate higher has definitely picked up speed. Wage inflation as a result of, you know, delaying recession has now become a focus on wage spiral narrative. So it's fascinating, the things that we talked about last year and the year before, how they're coming into play right now. And now everyone's worried about higher yields and pricing that in. So moving forward, Craig, we've got some time before FOMC up next, and the market's been pretty, you know, unconvinced of whether they're going to pause, hike, and cuts, as you mentioned, have kind of been stacked in next year. What's your baseline bet for the September and November meetings?
Yeah, look, I think that there is risk at this Jackson Hole event. And with Powell suggesting higher for longer, which leads to, you know, again, more disorder in maybe the long end of the bond market. So I think there's risk here, you know, call it in the next 2 days to 2 weeks. Should Powell kind of kick the can, you know, and suppress vol and not let the bond market, you know, get out of control, then I could see us, you know, selling, basically rallying next week into, you know, Labor Day, and we get into a situation where, you know, markets are doing fine again. But then I think we're going to be, you know, worrying again about inflation expectations moving back higher. I mean, up until 2 weeks ago, before this China stuff came out, I mean, you had five-year inflation expectations, you know, at the highs that we've seen in several years. And so, you know, there is fear again, and the Fed mentioned this in the minutes, that there is upside risk. A substantial majority of the Fed believes there is still upside risk to inflation. So I think that narrative has not been eliminated. And so while I don't suspect that they are going to raise rates at this point in September, I do think that provided the payroll number and the inflation print kind of come in line, the dot plot will show a November increase. And I think it's likely that they will go through with that rate hike, you know, in November of this year. Now, I think what is probably more interesting for the September Fed meeting will be how do they position the 2024 dots? Because based on this last meeting, the Fed's staff has eliminated their thought that we'd be that of recession. So if they're eliminating recession, that means they need to be taking down their expectations for the unemployment rate. And that means they're probably going to be taking up their expectation for PCE inflation for 2024. If that's the case, they need to put back in more rate hikes in order to kind of put the inflation back on a path to 2%. So I think it's possible that the September meeting, we see a rise in the dots for 2024, which again will signal to the market that the Fed is serious about keeping rates higher for longer. So, you know, depending on how we are, depending on how markets are acting kind of into the Fed, it's, you know, for this Fed meeting, it's actually after September expiry. So it's a little bit different than, you know, normal, which is, you know, a lot of times we see Fed meetings on the week of the quarterly expiry. This time we just don't. So it will depend largely how we are kind of going into that. But if we're up into it, I do suspect that we're going to see, you know, some trouble coming out of that meeting. And then when you know, you add to that, this something which we haven't talked about is the Fed, you know, the Fed liquidity indicator, which has kind of gone off the front page of people's radars, you know, over the course of the last 6 months as the markets have disconnected from the historical correlation to Fed net liquidity. But starting basically last week and into the third week of November of September, there's going to be a basically a $325 billion drain of liquidity as the Treasury rebuilds its coffers again. And that's a combination of, again, accelerated issuance to deal with the deficits and also the September tax payments. So a lot of money is going to be coming out of the system. Now, some of that will be dealt with from the RRP, but I think a good portion of this time is going to be dealt with a fall in bank reserves. And so when we get the fall in bank reserves, you know, that's typically the trigger for risk off behavior. And so we're going to have that dynamic kind of dealing, having to be dealt with in the background of September and into quarter end. You know, and usually, you know, I think if you go back in the last few years, there's been challenging end of quarter dynamics in play when we've seen these big liquidity drains. So that, you know, that's a backdrop for, you know, for September, but it will depend on how we trade, I think, the next few days, on back of the Jackson Hole reactions.
So a comment on liquidity, because it's defined differently by so many people. I kind of find liquidity is very opaque in and next level thinking. But for example, I, as you know, follow liquidity intraday in tells related to breadth and volume to better identify, you know, direction, intensity and duration of a move. But you're talking about something very, very different that is important to the market structure. And the more liquidity we have in the market, the more derivative trading and just activity that is typically very speculative and bullish. When we have a generally, you know, liquidity under pressure, this to me is also a sign that we're kind of looking at stealth QT somewhere in there and falling values of collateral. So where is and the falling value of collateral, obviously bonds falling has been, you know, part of that. But private sector banking, shadow banking, they rely on all of that value of collateral to fund assets. So it's kind of very, very self-fulfilling. What are your thoughts on the impact and like what is the you've already talked about the direction, liquidity is waning, but how intense will it be? And what's the duration of that so we can kind of judge potential market weakness or strength?
Yeah, I mean, I think what you're going to get here is a fairly, you know, rapid move in the liquidity drain, you know, over the course of the next, like I said, 6 weeks into the end of September. And then, you know, depending on how Treasury wants to deal with their, you know, basically you're talking about how the Treasury kind of fills up and spends down its money. And so there's seasonality to that. And so, you know, and then it also depends on what the Treasury kind of views as their desired level of cash. And so Yellen has kind of articulated where she would like that to be. It should be $650 billion of cash at the end of the third quarter and $700 billion at the end of the year. So right now we're in the low 400s and we're going to go to, you know, basically going to go to above 700 and then end the quarter at 650. So we're kind of going to have this, you know, 60 to 70 billion a week of drain, you know, over the course of the next 6 weeks. When you add to that this idea that you're talking about regarding collateral, I mean, this is, you know, investors, hedge funds, yes, and various others who are kind of use their own, the value of their own portfolios as collateral to lever up even more. And so given that the ballast of that collateral is U.S. Treasuries, as you have losses kind of accelerating in some of those positions, you have just have a you know, decreased ability to take on leverage, which, you know, I think is challenging to observe, you know, challenging to size quantitatively, but qualitatively, you know, clearly, you know, there will be headwind towards folks' abilities to lever up and take risk as the bond market continues to fall and the value of that collateral continues to fall. And so, you know, that is the kind of 1-2 punch from a liquidity point of view over the next 4 to 6 weeks, which I think is very challenging. And when you combine that with this market structure concept, which we've been talking about regarding, you know, dealer positioning and the systematic flow universe, you know, you have a potential for a fairly adverse kind of powder keg negative risk asset environment here over the course of the next, you know, 4 to 6 weeks. And, you know, yes, NVIDIA is making highs. I get it, but you know, there's other things in the economy and in the markets that are doing, you know, materially worse at this point. And so, and look, if NVIDIA or maybe some of the big cap tech continues to kind of grab market cap, maybe it's not NASDAQ you want to be short, but there's plenty of other things that I think I want to be short in this environment.
Well, I am looking very much at the technical level for this concept, right? Higher yields equals collaterals worth less equals less liquidity, which is market bearish. For me, obviously, this October high, when before we had that global central bank intervention, it was 4.33% on a 10-year. We just tagged that and then got whack-a-mole, you know, shot right back down. And of course, the dollar-yen had a big move, and then this had nothing to do with NVIDIA, but it was exactly when, you know, bond bulls, they must defend here, and they did. So that's still the level as it relates to risk off. If they pull this back down, obviously market loves it. And NVIDIA bulls are very happy unless there's a kind of a, again, buy the rumor, sell the news of NVIDIA earnings. That happened with Apple, very much so. So that's where we're at, kind of in summarizing the big events that are on our respective minds. You've gone over a really good one, which is liquidity, big picture treasury. And then, of course, right down to that's the macro, right down to the micro, which is NVIDIA after hours. you've touched on unemployment claims, Powell, you know, next CPI, all kinds of stuff that's going on regarding, you know, whether or not the debt ceiling will trigger any risk off in advance. But for right now, the last kind of item that I see on news that we can use to better manage macro and micro trades is we got a big vote coming up by the United Auto Workers, whether to strike. And it looks very, very likely. Wage demands are large, and they look like they're going to get met. And this is all part of, you know, this thesis that's helped, my thesis anyway, that it's helped, wage inflation has helped, you know, nominal wages increase, sustain demand, and corporations can pass on higher prices because consumers are paying it. And obviously, this has helped delay recession. But we're going to get into this next transition of wage spiral narrative. What's your thought on this? Since I think we ticked off all the other boxes on the items of interest in front of us.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm of the view that nominal, you know, income growth in the U.S. has been much stronger than the folks realize and that the Fed realizes. And, you know, I think there's been a lot of, you know, talk. Even today I saw, you know, a Cleveland Fed paper that was tweeted by, you know, Tim Rose basically saying, you know, that wages are kind of a lagging indicator to inflation as opposed to a leading indicator. I think this whole concept is kind of misplaced. I think we're going to be, you know, continuing to be in a robust wage environment where worker power is starting to kind of come back from an extremely depressed level, right? The share of profits between, you know, companies and labor has kind of shifted, you know, over the last 30, 40 years to, you know, very much in favor of corporates. And so now we're finally, you know, getting a point where in a tight labor market, you know, labor is starting to grind back its, you know, some of its fair share. It's obviously not going to happen over time, overnight, but it will happen. And I think that will continue to keep nominal income growth, you know, reasonably high, which means that the Fed ultimately, if they want to get inflation down to 2%, which is their stated target, and then we can talk about, are they going to shift to 3% or whatever? Sure, that's going to sit in the narrative background, but if they want to get to 2%, they need to do more tightening in order to stop this. So, you know, a big UAE worker settlement that shows double-digit wage gains isn't going to be something that, you know, other unions and other, you know, workers are not going to take note of, and they're going to feel like, you know, next time around, they're going to want something like that. So, you know, are we going to have an entrenched wage price spiral developing in the U.S., you know, like we saw in the late 70s, early 80s? You know, I don't think so. But, you know, kind of we don't need to be doing 10%. I mean, if we're in the 4 or 5% wage camp, then, and we don't have productivity gains, then we're not going to bring inflation down to 2%. So either the Fed will need to tighten more and slow the economy, or they'll abandon the 2% inflation target, in which case, you know, you don't want to own any long-durated U.S. treasuries. So I think that's kind of where the, you know, where the rubber hits the road on that.
And along the same lines, bond proxies of mega cap tech?
Look, I think there's this, you know, this bizarre dynamic developing where these cash rich mega cap companies like Apple, Google, Microsoft, Nvidia, and the like, or, you know, they're benefiting from the move in rates because of their huge cash balances. That's actually, you know, kind of offsetting what would normally be seen as headwind from higher rates that comes from multiple compression. So, you know, I'm not saying I want to own any of those big cap tech names here in size at these valuations, but on the margin, you know, certainly they are in some ways benefiting from these high cash positions when in an environment where they can earn 5 and 6% on their cash. And use that to, you know, whatever it is, buy back their stock or whatnot. So, I think probably big cap tech, the biggest cap tech is probably, you know, relatively insulated or better insulated than some of this other, you know, than some of this other stuff, you know, that doesn't benefit from having the high cash hoard positions. And what we know is it's the government's ability to regulate and to tax these companies, you know, is still very, very low. And so they truly do benefit from the dysfunction in DC by being able to earn kind of outsized supernormal profits and now getting the benefit from on the interest income side. It's hard to, you know, it's hard not to want to own these, but I think in a more protracted risk off environment where there's disorder in the bond market and we don't know exactly where, you know, the risk-free rate of long-term U.S. Treasury yields is going to settle, it's very difficult to want to own, you know, equities as an asset class in kind of max size. So I think that factor will still be in play.
Very well said. Well, I think we did our kind of macro to micro power hour. And thank you so much, all who attended. and Craig answering all of this kind of shotgun fire. These are the macro risks. What do you see? Because we get to talk about it every week for clients, and Craig also maintains a Slack channel in our client workspace where he populates his thoughts, his trades, and also the event risk that's coming in, and then does lots of custom engagement pro to pro with clients as part of the Edge product. But I wanted to kind of just try this X Spaces concept out and talk live versus in our kind of Zoom room that we do on Wednesday afternoon. So I'm appreciative to all those who follow us and popped in, and all those who've never heard of us and decided to give it a shot. Obviously, this is being recorded, and we'll send this along. But I think we covered our macro to micro power hour topics, and very grateful that everyone chimed in. Maybe we'll do this again. Maybe we'll add others. I know Bob has some comments on oil, but we'll get to those in a separate thread since he doesn't have time to pop in. But otherwise, yeah, we'll see what happens tomorrow. I'm sorry, Friday morning with Powell, since that's the next big tell. Any final words?
No, all good. I think if anyone has any follow up, feel free to direct message me or That's happy to engage and answer any questions.
Really grateful. All right. So Bond Bulls so far have defended here along with NVIDIA Bulls. And rest of the year, we'll see if we do have any credit stress percolate into the system. Right now, it is it was starting to intonate, but really hasn't moved strongly. And Fed intervention has not been needed. We literally had the Bank of Japan do the work for us as bonds were bouncing this morning. All right. I wish you all a great evening. Thanks again. And again, Samantha LeDuc, founder of LeDuc Trading, and Craig Shapiro, our macro advisor, Edge Manager, wish you a great rest of the trading week.
All right. Take care. Bye.